This podcast was initially recorded on the 10th of April 2020 and released on SoundCloud on the 21st of April 2020. It's cold outside, there's no kind of atmosphere. I'm all alone, more or less. Let me fly far away from here. Fun, fun, fun. In the sun, sun, sun. I want to lie shipwrecked and comatose, drinking fresh mango juice. Goldfish shows nibbling at my toes. Fun, fun, fun. In the sun, sun, sun.
Take it away! Ladies, gentlemen, androids, holograms, cats and gelfs, you are listening to Red Dwarf, The Promised Land, The Day After Yesterday. And after finally escaping the treacherous Whitehall, your hosts John Ryan and Matthew Ross are here to review this feature-length epic. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, and you are listening to The Day After Yesterday for Terror of the Tweeters, Red Dwarf, The Promised Land. We're recording this literally the day after yesterday, which was when it actually aired and everything. So this is interesting. Usually we do it immediately after.
The first time the format works.
Yeah. We do it immediately after so we can get it out that same day and everything, but that never happens.
It was a very long episode of Red Dwarf.
It was indeed. And by 11 p.m. at night and everything, it's just like, we're not recording this late. We need sleep.
Yeah, we were all laughed out.
Yeah, we all laughed out, and we needed sleep.
But yes, we are back to review Red Dwarf: The Promised Land.
Indeedy. So, with regards to that then, I shall let you take the lead for the reviews and everything, considering that you, out of the two of us, you are the major Red Dwarf nerd and everything. So, after all the build-up, all the hype and everything, how did you find it?
I loved it. It is probably one of my favourites of the Dave era, if not one of my favourite episodes of Red Dwarf, because it was an episode of Red Dwarf done to the maximum. I felt that it was probably some of the strongest acting that they've given for a very long time. It had excellent directing, especially some of the shots on the Red Dwarf ship and on the cat ship. The special effects looked fantastic. The mix with CGI and the models was superb. The jokes were there and they all landed. And the callbacks to the previous series was top notch. It was like a true fan had written this episode of Red Dwarf. And it was Doug Naylor. And so he is. And he knows the show so well. And I just love it. I'm going to gush about it so much on this podcast. I truly, truly loved it.
I can absolutely see where you're coming from with regards to that. I think that with regards to it, I would agree with absolutely everything there. I think out of all of it, there's only one minor complaint that I have, which I will get to later and everything. But in the grand scheme of it, it is only one minor thing. But hopefully it's understandable. But yeah, with regards to it, I can't disagree with anything you've said there. It is literally Red Dwarf done to the max. It was just big, colossal, epic, grand scope. It's just like, it is literally Red Dwarf the movie. It is Red Dwarf the movie, but like I said last time, they've taken away the idea that they had for the original one that's now become mythologized and everything, and after being, what's the word I'm looking for and everything, I don't know what point you're trying to make here. I can't help. Cannibalized. Yes, cannibalized. All of the different of the different pieces have just been taken out and put into different episodes and everything. So they've literally gone away from that idea and made something new that harks back again to the beginnings of it and everything, but makes it grand in scope and scale. And actually, one thing I just need to go through that I actually mixed up and everything, when we were speaking about the cast in the last part and everything, and I said that one of them was Yaz's sister from Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
I actually got that wrong. It's not Yaz's sister. No, it's Bill's friend from the episode where they move into the haunted house.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Knock knock.
Yes, knock knock. That brilliant one with that brilliant one with David Suchet and everything, who is David just Suchet. So creepy.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the guest cast in this as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. With regards to it then, just going into finer details. Firstly, again, we've already gushed about those first 5 minutes, just how much of a grand scope that it gets with regards to that. But then when it starts off with the dwarfers and everything, which is the first new, which is the first bit, new bit that we've actually seen and everything. It's just like the minute that it starts with that and everything, it just gets the ball. It just gets the ball rolling and everything. It's just, it's just trying to.
Yeah, because this cast know each other so well, and they've been doing it for so long. They do settle into the characters, and there are some amazing jokes in those scenes. All the stuff about having to have a baby and the cat having a sex change. That's some genius stuff. And what I think Red Dwarf does is it knows its own lore, but it doesn't get caught up in it. Even in an episode like this, where it is talking a lot about the history of Red Dwarf, it doesn't get tangled up in it. It knows the story it wants to tell, and it knows how the history can help it. And I think what Red Dwarf does very well is confuse the audience as to whether or not it's setting up a Chekhov's gun or a Deus Ex Machina. Because there's some things that are just there to be a joke, and there's some things that are there that come back and are relevant later. So, Kat having a sex change to help Lister, or Lister having a sex change and Kat having sex, and all of that stuff. Any other show, that would have been a relevant plot point later.
Here,
and it would have come back to haunt them. Here, it's just there setting up a joke. Whereas something like Rimmer getting the diamond light, that's set up as a quick joke, and then that does come back to serve the plot later. So I think they've got a good balance of knowing which Red Dwarf jokes work.
Yeah, no, one thing I just want to go on to then with regards to what you said there, the joke about Rimmer's diamond suit and everything. First of all, just how that sets up just so many good gags. First of all, when it gets booted in and you just see him going through the classic costumes and everything, it's just like, this is just...
And he's wearing the blue quilted jacket from season 7, and he's wearing the green one, and oh, yes.
Yeah, it's just like, that is just pure fan wank, but it just builds up and up. It works well into it and everything. Mm-hmm. And then just him going full on Christopher Reeve and everything in the diamond suit and everything. It's just like, I feel like a superhero. And it's just going on and on and on. And then, blip!
He's out of battery.
How did I run out of battery? We didn't follow the regulations. Who told you not to follow the regulations? Well, you did, sir. Yeah,
there's all that about the mighty light, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, the something shite. I can't remember what joke it was that Kat called him.
I can't remember, but it's just, yeah, no, it's just Chris Barry just hamming it up is just brilliant.
Yeah. That's it. Chris Barry is an amazingly strong actor, and people underestimate what he's capable of a lot of the time, because Rimmer is a very tightly wound person. And I was watching the behind the scenes of this that they've put up on UK TV Play. Is that available in Ireland?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, they've put a behind the scenes up, and they've put the Smegups on. But they were talking in the behind the scenes about how the Mighty Light is different to Ace Rimmer. because Ace Rimmer is a confident and outgoing Arnold, whereas the Mighty Light is normal Rimmer, but without any inhibitions. Because it is doing all the stuff that Rimmer wants to do. He's just never been able to do it before, whereas Ace Rimmer is going above and beyond anything that he's possible of, because he's a completely different person. The Mighty Light is one of my favourite adaptations of a Dwarfen, up there with Dwayne Dibley.
Yeah, no, I get where you're coming with that, because if you were just going through the motions and everything, you would just think, oh yeah, just no, just make him Ace Rimmer and everything. But it's just like that would just be way, way too obvious. And besides, as I think we've mentioned and everything, the last episode prior to this was Skipper, and just with the dimension hopping, it would have, if they had done an Ace Rimmer joke, it would have worked there better as opposed to here and everything. So yeah, I'm still a bit annoyed that we didn't get an Ace Rimmer joke in Skipper and everything, but just I completely understand why it wasn't done here, because it would have just been way, way, way too obvious to do.
Yeah, because I think the Mighty Light persona is probably a better person than Ace Rimmer is. Mm. He's sort of that personality that Rimmer hopes he is. And it's sort of, he's impactful, he's bold, he's decisive, and he's friendly more than anything.
Yeah.
He's helping out people. Mm.
And then once he blips out and everything, it just starts a brilliant barrage of jokes. First of all, the extension cables.
carrying the extension leads around the ship.
See, I pissed myself laughing at that, because I know exactly what that feels like and everything. Because normally, this is just going to sound completely mundane and everything, but where I live and everything, we just have two big, gigantic lawns and everything. And I'm usually the one who has to go out and do them whenever the weather is fine and everything. It's just like, that's fine, I don't mind, I could just put on Big Finish and just do them and everything, it's fine. But we used to have to do them with an electric lawnmower. And these are lawns that just have bushes everywhere. And you just know that if you've ever tried to do one of those with an electric lawnmower and everything, it is a nightmare. And it's just like, there's not enough cable. So it's just like extension cable coming out the window, trying to maneuver around and everything. It's just like, so much fun. But it's just like, yeah.
See, what I would have done with that is set up a joke where the wires get crossed over. Do like a Scooby-Doo thing where he's going along the corridors and has to work his way back.
Yeah. No, that would have been brilliant. I think that was actually something that I was watching, just expecting to happen and everything. Again, it's obvious, but it would have been something that if you had written it, if you write it properly, it does work. One thing that I notice and everything with regards to it is that there are tropes that do appear in a lot of stuff with regards to this when you look into things and everything, but tropes are tropes for a reason and everything, that they do recur and everything. But there's writing a trope well and there's writing a trope badly, and with regards to it, that would be something that if they were inclined to do it, I would say they could do well.
Yeah, Red Dwarf is very much one of those shows that knows it's a science fiction comedy and plays up to it in a different way to something like Rick and Morty, where Rick and Morty is taking the piss out of it and making jokes out of that. Red Dwarf loves that it is a sci-fi show and loves to use all the tropes. There was that joke with the simulants, I think they were called, the high-tech ones, where they're going on a whole sci-fi spiel, and the cat goes something like, haven't we heard all this before? And Crichton says, sir, these are simulants. They have no shame in using hackneyed old cliches.
Yes, the Expanoids and Twentica.
Expanoids, yeah. That's the one.
You know, we're not so different, you and I. Now you're taking the smeg.
It's Kevin Eldon, though, isn't
it? It's Kevin Eldon. It's just whenever
the actor.
Whenever I watch that now, I just think, oh my god, that's Penfold from Danger Mouse.
But yeah, Red Dwarf can lend itself to a lot more clever comedy because of that, and a lot of the jokes are visual as well. Mm. Probably the biggest laugh that it got out of me was the floppy disk, right in the opening. and the audience that made them laugh as well. You could hear they had to pause for about 5 minutes to let the audience breathe after that one. And Crichton turning up and going, I wondered what this slot was for, and opens a cupboard with an old CD-ROM drive.
An old floppy disk drive. It's just like, yeah. No, just
giant floppy.
It's just like, I remember when these things were relevant. And even after they were relevant, I just remember I had a computer class back near the end of the previous decade. When I say the previous decade, I mean the noughties. Right about 2008, 2009 and everything. We had computer classes in secondary school. They still used floppy disks to save the data that we did. I'm being serious here. Now, with a gun...
Really?
Really. Now...
They used floppy disks.
Now, with regards to it and everything, it was tiny data that was just saving records and everything. So, with regards to it, kind of understandable and everything. But it was just like, yeah, that was literally the absolute tail end of that and everything. Because the amount of people who now look at floppy disks and everything, especially... Have you ever seen... children reacting to floppy disks?
Yeah.
He 3D printed the save icon as just like, oh, you sweet, sweet, innocent little things. You have no idea what the dark days were like.
See, I think that's where a joke like that works across the generations, because those that are younger and grow up knowing it as a dodgy old thing of the past... will laugh at that and go, ha, I can't believe they used to store things on things like that. And look, it's massive. Like how all technology used to be. And those that grew up with floppy disks and those that remember them from early in their lives will look at that joke and go, ha, didn't the past used to be fun? Things were better when we had floppy disks like that. And it works because it's deliberately... playing up to your expectations of what Holly's disc should look like. I mean, if anything, it's a Red Dwarf joke. We should have known they were going to do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, with regards to it, it reminds me of the videotape joke that they had from Back to Earth when they were looking at all the DVDs and say, just explaining why
videos are just too big to lose.
Explaining why they would still have videotapes in the future, because in the real world, it was because this was made in the 1980s. DVDs were invented yet, but in the Red Dwarf universe, it's just like videos came back. Fashion because DVDs you could just lose them and everything. It's just like, yeah, it's just like, okay, I get the joke there, but also that weirdly makes sense and everything. I mean with regards to it,
I
was a child and everything, I loved my DVDs too much. They were just tossed out and used as frisbees and everything. It's just like, I was just like, do I actually try and replace these and everything? I was just like, oh, I see them in a pound shop. Yes, I will replace it.
Yeah, and I think the size of it as well plays up to the joke. Incidentally, in the Smegups on UK TV Play, Danny John Jules keeps tripping over his line whilst he's holding the thing, because Lister has a big speech to give and then Kat has a joke before they put it in the slot, and Danny John Jules keeps screwing up that line, so it gets to like the sixth take and Craig Charles is stood there with it going, will you please hurry the fuck up and sort this line out? I've had to say this speech half a dozen times now. And one of the crew just shouts off screen, Danny, we'll skip this take and just put it in the machine. We'll move on.
Oh, I cannot wait for the Blu-ray of this.
Oh, yeah. Some of those Smegups, yes.
Incidentally, I think they revealed on Twitter that the DVD and Blu-ray are coming out either the end of May or the beginning of June. I think it's June the 1st.
Well, no, hold on. I was looking and it had a date on Amazon.
Oh, lovely. No, I haven't checked Amazon. I just remember seeing it somewhere on Twitter. So, yeah, no, Amazon would be a good place to check.
Okay. Well, they usually get them out pretty quick. Mm. Series 12 and 11 came out, it seemed like days after they were on sale.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that, yeah, they came out a good bit after. Sorry, no, as in not soon after, yeah.
Yeah. Let's have a gander. June the 1st.
Lovely, I remembered it right.
Yeah, so that's what, a month and a half away?
Yep, just over a month and a half away.
So that's not bad for a TV special. Mm.
Is that not long to wait.
Mm. And in the behind the scenes documentary, it's about a half hour documentary. It starts with Doug Naylor talking about how when he wrote the script and he sent it off to people, he drew on a post-it note attached to the front of the script the image of the cat ships forming the cat face over the planet and just stuck that to the front of the ship and said, make this happen as the first scene. And so I think it is so reassuring to have this writer and this cast that love the show as much as everybody else does and are so into telling the best jokes they can.
Absolutely. And I mean with regards to this now and everything, as I said, when they were doing the AA adverts and everything, they got Rob Grant back in to do one or two tiny things. I think with regards to it now, the falling out that they've had and everything, I think that has definitely healed over the years and everything, especially because of the fact that they did a lot of the stuff for the DVDs and everything. So I would dare say that the Dave stuff with regards to it, I'd say that will more than likely have happened because of the fact that Rob trusts Doug enough to carry this on and everything. Because with regards to it, 7 and 8 and everything were just like, that was after the split and everything where there was still falling out and everything. Now they have a good bit more confidence. They would gone back to the roots and everything. So I'd say that that trust is definitely there.
That's it, and Red Dwarf in the Dave era certainly has been hitting its stride. Series that they have been fantastic. We spoke about this in the preamble before it, and you know we enjoy it. It has got some great jokes in it, and this is Dave Dwarf typified. It has a lot of the strongest jokes in the series, and it has the modern sensibilities to be able to look back at Red Dwarf history and make jokes about what worked and what didn't, and lend itself to exciting possibilities, and to do it all with technology to make it look great, because the models were great, and some of that CGI was superb for a low-budget commercial channel TV special.
Oh, definitely.
Something going out on Dave, made by UK TV. You tell people in the 90s that UK TV are making something that looks this good. Nobody would have believed you. Nobody was giving them the money to do this.
I completely agree. But as I said and everything, the first 5 minutes that I saw, I literally just went, this feels like something that should be in a cinema, in a theatre and everything.
Yeah.
As in with regards to when they're open and it's safe to go in and everything. But it's just like, yes, this just feels like it has that grand scope to do so.
Yeah, I can imagine there'll be people wanting fan screenings of it in independent, like the Prince Charles Cinema in London, that's always doing screenings of TV shows like this. I think Edgar Wright hosts quite a few. But something, it absolutely deserves to be in a cinema. It looked fantastic.
Definitely. With regards to that then, just heading back to the jokes with regards to Rimmer before we continue on to any of the other ones. One last thing which I absolutely loved and everything, and I think a lot of people, if they were fans of the classic series and knew what was going on and what was wanted, would like the grayscale Rimmer.
Oh, now, yes. That's such a nice idea.
I know. Now, here's the thing. I dare say you would probably know about this, but I don't know if a lot of others. I only found out because of the fact I was going through it and everything. The original idea for doing the series back in the 80s and everything was that to denote that it was a hologram and the low power hologram, as a matter of fact, was that Rimmer was going to be in grayscale. As in, literally, he was singled out in grayscale and everything. But in the 80s, trying to do that for a single character and everything, that was going to take a lot of effects and a lot of budget. A lot of budget which they...
Yeah, I believe it was in the original scripts, and there must be versions on the DVDs, because I think I've seen them, where every hologram that appears is in black and white. So the science officer in the beginning... where he dies and they had to cut him for the cake in the first episode. I believe there's a version out there where he's in black and white as well. It may just be I'm confusing it with things fans have made and put on YouTube in recent years.
More than likely. However, they did do a Red Dwarf comic I think it was part of the Red Dwarf fan club magazine that they did and everything. And in that, they were able to do the concept of Rimmer being a grayscale hologram and everything, as was intended. And then I would dare say that the intention was that when he came into being Hard Light and everything, that he would have gotten a lot more color and everything due to the fact of, you know, the intended better technology and everything. So,
Because they never really play up to Rimmer being a hologram properly. There's a few bits in the early series where, like, he walks through a table or Lister walks through him. But they kind of stopped with those jokes because it was very difficult to do in the 80s and 90s. The technology wasn't quite there. And so now, to make him Diamond Light and to give him all the powers and to make him black and white, to do everything they wanted to do early on, it must be so satisfying for them.
Oh no, I can absolutely imagine. But just one other thing that they do go with now, because of the fact that the technology exists whereby not only can it be done, but it can be done for cheap and everything. Because with regards to this, I'm recording my part of this on Audacity here and everything. It's not advertising Audacity and everything, but it's just like, it is the main thing that a lot of people get in order to do audio stuff and everything, because it's free and it has a shit ton of effects and everything. And it's like, one thing that the special does and everything is that it slightly distorts Rimmer's audio. It makes it sound like it's coming from an old radio and everything. And it's just like, that's just something that helps to add to the fact that I don't even think they would have thought about in the 80s, let alone actually had the budget to do and everything.
I'll only be able to hear in mono.
The output is just like, it's coming from an old radio and everything. It's just like
standard definition.
Yeah, it's just like, it's those tiny little things that just make it more brilliant and more funny and everything. It's just like, I absolutely love that.
I hope they found a way to do that live with Chris Barry on set and showing it on the screens to the audience. That might be a bit of a stretch to do it live. But it may be just about possible, but it would have been difficult because the audience seemed to be laughing at the right times. Maybe it was just all pre-recorded and they showed it on the screens.
Possibly. Well, with regards to it, there would have been some things that they would have been able to do live and everything. And I dare say for the rest of them, they would have had stuff already properly done and everything so that they could have it rehearsed. And thus, they would have screens whereby they could show the effects and everything. Because, like you said, there were laughs that were at the correct time and everything. Especially with that first brilliant joke at the beginning of the cat face by the ships and everything. So there would have to be some way that they would have been able to do that and everything. But with regards to that, then, the last thing I would just have to say to Rimmer is just one thing that was good that wasn't funny and everything, but it was still good. The introspection that he got, it went really deep for him.
Oh my God, that moonlight scene. God, that had me in tears. That's Red Dwarf. Emotional gut punch, and it's something that you don't expect the show to do, but it has been there since the very beginning. Take the scene when Rimmer gets the letter that his dad has died, and he goes up to the observation deck and Lister's there to console him. That's some of the strongest moments for their characters, and it brings it back in this in a whole new way. And I think it is so perfectly done, because there is a hatred between them. They aren't designed to get on. If you are designing two diametrically opposed characters, you get Lister and Rimmer. But because they've been through so much together, they genuinely do care for each other. And Lister knows that he needs Rimmer to survive and to carry on being a normal person now. So I think that's what possibly made Series 7 a bit weaker, because he didn't have that to bounce off.
Yeah.
But, those moments when Rimmer was... I'm dead. I've always been dead. I don't know who I am. I mean, odd place to go in the middle of a comedy movie, but it works so well.
Absolutely. And it's just like, it's one thing that it gives Chris Barry just these absolute moments to be a grand proper actor and everything. Not saying that comedy actors aren't proper actors and everything, but you're just given this chance to just go deep into the character and everything and just deliver something that's absolutely brilliant. Like you said, it would nearly bring you to the verge of tears.
Yeah, and I think that these characters being so well developed, you can do it with, and you should do it more, really.
With regards to that, then, the next thing that I think we'd have to get to is the main driving force of the plot, which is the cats. And I say cats plural with regards to the cat race, the clerics, the ferals and everything, and just where all the guest stars come from and everything. And it's just like, I just loved every single moment that they were on screen and everything. They were just brilliant.
Yeah. It worked. There was a bit in the behind the scenes when they're interviewing Craig Charles, and he talks about the moment when he first walked on set and saw Ray Fearon as the chief cat. And he said, "We finally get a look at the person we should have cast as the original cat." Just to try and take the piss out of Danny a bit. But yeah, that was fantastic. Ray Fearon in that role nailed
it. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just, I've said before, I don't know if I've said on the podcast before, but I've definitely said to you and everything, I love it when we just get a proper hammy villain that just eats the scenery. And Ray Fearon doesn't just eat the scenery, he digests it. He is brilliant.
Yeah. And then puts it in his cat litter.
Yes, digests it and then drops it in the cat litter and everything. He is just fantastic. And then just all of the cat-themed jokes. Like, one thing from the 5 minutes and everything. The cat flaps. You had mentioned the cat flaps and everything.
The cat flaps, yes.
And then
One thing that I didn't quite get. Why did they have Wolverine claws?
I think,
were they actual claws or were they part of their wrist armor or clothing that they just out?
I think that they were implied to be real claws and everything, because I think they were just trying to do it in such a way whereby they would have been the evolved claws that came out of cat's paws and everything, you know, from the paw tips and everything.
So can our cat do that? Can Danny John Jules have Wolverine claws?
I don't.
Because he was Ray Fearon's brother, they said at the end, wasn't he?
Yeah. Now, okay. So here's the thing, which I'm gonna say was my one criticism with it and everything, which was that obviously that it was harkening back to the cats and what Dave did in order to save Frankenstein and everything, and thus lead to the creation of the cat's race and everything, and then just the revelation of Cat being Ferron's brother and everything just highlighted this and everything, was that they didn't, the one thing I think that they failed with doing was that they didn't do enough discussion of the cat with regards to the clerics and everything. They didn't look into that as much. They did have that small bit there and everything, but it's just like, it just felt a bit like an info dump and everything. But with
I can see where you're coming from. It did lend itself to that nice joke of them offering the cat the chance to come and join them, and Cat says, "No, I'm already home." Okay, we'll blow up your ship. They didn't tell me that before I made my choice.
No, that was a good.
But yeah, I can see where you're coming from in that they didn't develop the familial connections yet. I like that it was the original cats that left Red Dwarf still prowling the universe. And I like that they still remembered leaving Red Dwarf and everybody they left behind. The sick and the lame, as that old bloke said in Waiting for God. And the idiots.
So it's the implication that this was still fairly recent history, because I say fairly recent history. This is because of the scale of this is 3 million years of evolution and everything.
Well, that's it. They had that 3 million years of evolution, but these are still the same cats. And in universe, it's been what, 30 years since Dave came out of the show.
Just over 30, under 40 years.
Yeah, and you can kind of tell that it's taking their toll on them. Especially Crichton. Crichton's suit battered to pieces. It's certainly been a few years since season 12 finished.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, the cats having that connection to our proper cat, they didn't play with it as much as they could have done. I'll give them that.
But that is literally my only complaint. Like, you just had this set up in order to have the connections and the conflict with the cat and everything, and just expand upon that and everything. That is my only criticism with regards to this. That could have been done a bit. That could have been done a bit more and explored a bit more and everything. But when you had so much to try and tie into a 90-minute script and everything, it's understood that some things would have had to have been cut and everything. So it's understandable, but it would have been something that would have fit so very well and something I would have liked to have seen and everything.
Having said that, for 90 minutes, maybe it was just that there were advert breaks every 10 or so minutes. It felt long. That's something that I'm going to critique it for. It felt long. I got to the 10 o'clock mark, an hour in, and I was like, oh, okay, it's nearly finished. Oh, no, wait, we've got another hour to go. Oh, blimey. I was enjoying it, but it felt long. I almost felt like I had to go to sleep and pick it up again in the morning. I'm waiting to see if I can get the Blu-ray and just watch it all in one go, if it'll work better then. I think the advert breaks are what's tripping.
Yeah, I would say that would more than likely be it and everything. Because with regards to some stuff and everything, I'm able to watch some stuff and everything, and it doesn't feel like that it's dragging on or anything. For example, some episodes of Sherlock and everything, they just speed by, and yet they go on for 90 minutes and everything. I dare say this would have probably been the same. Ad breaks would just be one of the things that hinders it. There are some shows that work with ad breaks, and there's some that don't. I think one of the best examples would have been the way that they handled the ad breaks for the Great British Bake Off. I don't know if this had been mentioned before and everything, but the way that they handled the ad breaks and everything is that they find a strategic time to put it in, and they just do it. They don't have any slight preamble beforehand before going into the advert, or any preamble from going into the advert back into the show and everything. It's just quick, sudden, snappy, and they described it as just giving you this little break to get a cup of tea or to get something to have and everything. That's where an advert works. It gives you a break.
That's
and a
it. They've not got it quite nailed with this. And I think one of the ones that bugged me certainly was they did it in the middle of a joke. They did an advert break as the Red Dwarf crew found the cat clerics in the airlock or whatever it was, in the lift. They found them. They went, oh, hello, and cut to an advert break. And that feels wrong. It maybe should have been less advert breaks on major points and major changes in the scripts or the scenes.
Yeah.
It's the perils of having a commercial channel running it.
Yeah, with regards to it, I can understand a bit of why they were done and everything, because they were feeling like they were mini cliffhangers. So it was understandable why and everything, especially with regards to the fact that, as well as comedy, they were going down the dramatic route of this and everything. I mean, immensely, because this there is a good sense of drama in this as well as comedy.
Yeah, and I think that if they just hadn't done it cutting up some of the jokes, it's what bugs me. I mean, it's completely off topic, but in YouTube, when YouTube started adding adverts randomly in the middle of videos, and it would interrupt someone mid-sentence, that's almost what it felt like here.
Yeah.
Because, the story was going on, and it was building to something, and then there'd be an advert break, and then you'd have to calm down, and then they'd come back, and they'd just carry on with the scene. I don't think the writers and the cast knew when the advert breaks were going to be, because, of course, you can't really until you come to edit it. But there didn't seem to be many places where the advert breaks worked for me.
Well, with the regards to it, you're on the essence that that's your only major complaint with regards to it.
Yeah. So that's it. It did feel very long.
With regards to that, it's just like, those are just the two only major complaints that we have. That it could have explored stuff with the cat a bit more and the advert breaks and everything. But it's just like those are just stuff that feel like that the cat bit is understandable because you had so much that you had to put in, and the advert one that will more than likely be probably be fixed by the time the Blu-ray comes out, because it goes through seamlessly and everything.
Yeah,
like one thing that I remember was that when I was watching Skipper on TV for the first time and everything, where they had the ad break was the reveal of Holly and everything. thing. You just had Rimmer walking past. Holly's face was just there on the screen and everything. And it's just static there. It's just like, all it just is there is just showing, Holly's back! That way for 5 minutes before we can get him. However, on the DVD and everything, it's just like they don't have that pause. Rimmer just walks by and it's just, you hear the cheer and he just goes, morning, Arnold. It's just like they don't have that big giant pause that you normally have for setting up the ad break.
Yeah, see, maybe it's just because I've not watched the past few series of Red Dwarf on telly. I've watched them when they first came out on UK TV Play because they went up a week earlier over here in Britain. Yeah. And I've watched them on the DVDs. So I'm not used to having Red Dwarf broken up with adverts because it was on the BBC before and our taxis pay for that thing. And now I don't think the writers are used to it either.
Yeah.
But yeah, as much as it felt long, it was very smartly plotted. There were distinct beats and there were distinct changes in scenery every so often. So it was on the Red Dwarf ship and then it was on the Cat ship and then it went to Starbug and they crashed and they were stuck in the desert and then they went back to Red Dwarf and then they went back to the Cat ship. That flow mirrored very nicely.
And then back to the Cat stuff and everything that we were discussing before we got into two major critiques and everything. Just all of the Cat, just the Cat-like tendencies that they wrote in for everyone and everything. Like just the jokes of getting Ferret in a scratching post and everything. And just getting them... The one bit that I absolutely loved and everything because it was a proper Chekhov's gun and we didn't even realise it. Was the laser pointer and everything. It's just like you had that at the beginning, and it's just like, that's a brilliant distraction. And then you see at the end, it's just like, oh, that is smart. That is brilliant.
Your cats are going to tear you apart now. And this is a red dot moving around his chest. Yeah, and the Anubis stone as well. That's another set thing that could have just been there as a cheap joke. It's just beetle dung preserved but actually became a Chekhov's gun and serviced the plot later.
Yeah,
it very clever. God, I wish I could write scripts this clever. I wish I could write scripts that made me laugh this much, because fuck knows I can't do it, but Doug Naylor can, which is good. I'll just keep watching it.
Absolutely. And then with regards to it, just even the work of Andrew Ellard and everything, just tightening down these scripts and everything so that they're streamlined and everything, and that everything just works. It's just like, yeah.
Did he work on this one?
Yes, he did. His name was appeared on the credits.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So he won't be doing the tweet notes for it, because he did that whilst the script was being written.
Yes, he did that whilst the script was being written and everything. So, yeah.
Incidentally, I've got it playing on the TV screen behind me, and they're just there. It's where the cats are first meeting and getting the Anubis stone, and the cat clerics having Lister's hat from the first series on, and the cigarette in the ear, which is something he did in maybe like one episode in series one. He just put his cigarette in his ear, and that became apparently a thing that all the cats worship.
Yeah, it's just like it just harkens back to that just sense of the Chinese whispers that occurs with these religions and everything. It's just like they just hear one thing, and it's just like, this is the thing that we must worship and everything. And it's just like, it's just lampooning organized religion in that way. That's one of the things that I like with regards to this, because I'm going to be frank and everything. Mm. I'm not majorly religious and everything. I don't have any major beliefs.
No, I'm not.
I won't chastise anyone for having a belief in everything, especially if it's driving you to do good things, as in actually proper, humane, kind actions and everything, and not bullshit and everything. I won't chastise anyone with regards to that and everything, but just the organized aspect of it and everything, like just the hierarchy and the sometimes business-minded structure of it and everything. Just I like it when you just lampoon that bit and everything, because it's not something that should be organized. It's something that's just meant to be for want of a better term, a way of life and everything. It's just like, it's something that's just meant to teach you to be nice.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not something that's meant to be just completely and utterly glorified. It's meant to be something simple, something understandable, and something that's telling you to do good. So
what was I listening to the other day? There was one of the Colin Baker Frobisher Big Finish stories that lampoons religion in a similar way. I think it might have been the first one. The Holy Terror.
Yes, the Holy Terror.
Terror talks about religion in the same sort of way and sort of taking the mickey out of it. Instantly, that cigarette in the air thing, that wasn't a Lister thing. Craig Charles used to genuinely do that because his party trick was convincing people he could smoke a cigarette through his ear. So he would inhale a puff of smoke through the cigarette, keep it in the back of his throat and tell people, hey, I can smoke through my ear, stick the cigarette in his ear and let the smoke out.
That is brilliant.
So he used to do that on set, and so that became a Lister thing. And so now for that to be a tradition that's passed down and religion distorting, there was even the jokes about your traditions were developed over thousands of years and forgot what they originally were, and Crichton said, yeah, that happens all the time, or something like that. It knew what it was doing, and I think people that are religious aren't going to be annoyed at it because they surely must be able to see.
Oh yeah,
where it's
oh,
coming
yeah.
from.
No,
they must be able to see the kindness that.
Oh
it's
yeah,
shown.
No, it's the same thing with regards to the likes of Monty Python, Life of Brian, and everything. Because Life of Brian isn't lampooning the religion itself. It's lampooning just the blind worship, the blind following, the not questioning the organization with regards to it and everything. It's all the questionable leading to bad aspects of a following or a religion and everything. Because with regards to it, there's just I could go on about followings and everything, and just how you see the same types of negative aspects of people in all of them and everything. Like with regards to it, especially fandoms and everything, like they're all followings, and you're just going to see you are going to see the shit makers and everything. So, but yeah.
And, dear listeners, John is Irish, so you can take his word on it about religions going wrong.
Yes. Yes, indeedy. Yes.
That's a risky joke. You can feel free to cut that one
yes,
out.
Yes, very risky joke. Even if it's not with regards to the original intent of what it probably is and everything, it's just like, you can find about 10 things that joke can relate to rather than the most obvious one, and it would still work and everything. It would still be highly questionable.
Well, I mean, anyway, Ray Fearon was good as the religious extremist in that respect.
Yeah.
In that he didn't want to believe in his version, and so tried to make himself a god and tried to just make other people pointlessly martyrs. There was that moment when he was going to blow up Red Dwarf, and the other people around him were going, "But sir, two of your men are still on board." And it's those moments where the script is, again, being very clever, but it's being very dramatic as well. It's making a stand and saying, this is what the Cack character is about. This is what Ray Fearon's character is doing differently to our Cat, and doing differently, trying to be his own god and trying to show off and make other people worship him.
Mm. Indeed. So yeah, with regards to it, just the way that even the three clerics are and everything, the blind worship that they have of that and everything, it's just like, again, that's another lampoon and everything. But then when
Cloister, David Cloister.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, no, that is also a set up for a brilliant, brilliant joke at the end. But just, it's again, just that look at organized religion and everything. And just when you just have this realization of this, that sometimes it can end up being pointless, that you lose your faith and everything, that you lose this one thing that's driving you. Again, it's one of these things why I don't chastise anyone for believing in a religion if they're using their if you're using the belief to do good and everything, because that it is a good driving force if you're doing good stuff.
Something that struck me, and it's personal experience, I used to go to a church youth group, and if anybody involved in that youth group, because I'm still very good friends with all of them, is listening to this, I'm not deriding you in any way, don't worry. But the cleric who couldn't speak until she met Lister, I have seen that happen a lot. There was a lot of instances when I was involved in that youth group of somebody being injured, and they sat around praying for it for a while, and they were instantly healed. I mean, it's obviously a psychosomatic thing. There wasn't any really payoff to why that cleric couldn't talk. I don't think, anyway, but it was... That was, again, lampooning religion in a clever way and in a loving way. Because as much as I personally think it's bollocks, there will be a lot of people that find sanctity in it, and a lot of my friends who are religious know what I think about it and are fully versed in my opinions on it. But I that stuck with me because I've seen it happen. I went to that youth group when, and I must have been around 14, 15, I injured my foot and I was on crutches for about 3 months, and there was a moment towards the end of it when the foot was healing and it was feeling better and I was starting to walk more without the crutches. I still went to the youth group with the crutches, but there was a night when they decided to pray for me and to pray for my leg and to get it healed, and you know, I didn't bother telling them that it had already healed and I was just playing up to the crutches because I didn't want to risk any damage happening. But they took me walking normally that night as a miracle. And, you know, I'm not deriding at all anybody that believes in that, because psychosomatic healing is still healing and it still makes a lot of people feel a lot better about themselves. But referencing it in Red Dwarf with the character, I was hoping that character was going to be mostly sign language, but they could have done that. That would have been a nice thing to do. But having that be, I'm so into this religion that it's going to heal me in ways that I didn't need healing. That stuck with me. That was a big thing to happen based on my experience personally. And it's Red Dwarf tapping into that. I didn't expect it to.
Well, with regards to it, again, it's just one of those things that, yes, you would have in these kinds of religions and everything that is rife for lampooning. But there would be the people who would try to do that as a additional way of helping. They wouldn't be saying focus it all on here and everything. They would just be saying we will do this to try and help you and everything. This won't be the only thing that will help you, but it will be something.
It is a kindness.
Yes, absolutely. And then you would have stuff like the televangelists and everything, and then all of the people who send thoughts and prayers and everything. It's just that again would be the other end. It's just like, this is the only thing that will help and everything. It's just like, no it isn't. You're just, why are you even doing this? So yeah, it's, again, this is something that really that brings up a talking point about religion and everything, that, oh yeah,
I know, this is a science fiction comedy from the 80s making us discuss the complexities of modern religion.
Indeed. Well, I think we've gone,
and we love it for it.
Oh, absolutely. I think with regards to it, we've gone through all we can with regards to the religious aspect and everything. The next thing I would just have to go on to and everything is Norman loving us Holly and everything. Just the fact that we now got him back in a more permanent aspect and everything is absolutely brilliant. And it's just like, the first bit of it and everything, you're just there. It's like, it sets it up that it's just going to be this one-off joke and everything, and then that's it. It's just like, you're serious? You only just brought him back for that? That's a rip-off. And then he just comes back later and everything. Ooh. And it's just an absolute belter. It's just an absolute belter.
And he filmed that, sat in front of the audience. He was sat right in front. They show it on the behind the scenes. It was him with a camera and a black polo neck jumper on and a black screen behind him and a teleprompter directly in front, like, must have been less than a foot away from the people sat on the front row of the audience.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant.
And doing his lines. And I think I've been to see Norman Lovett comedy live. He did a show around Manchester a couple of years ago. And he has this extraordinary ability. Maybe it's just the deadpan presentation or the voice of making lines that aren't jokes funny. You laugh at things that he says just because Norman Lovett's saying them. There was a lot of moments when he was being straight-faced Holly that people were laughing at. Because Norman Lovett is an inherently funny person, and he plays up to that a lot.
Absolutely. But just even just the absolute deadpan nature of just the first appearance of him and everything, where it's just original pre 3 million year wait Holly and everything. It's just like it feels slightly like a cop out and everything, but it's still properly funny and everything. It's just like you're seeing Norman Lovett just being completely deadpan and everything, but just without the jokes. It's still funny, even though he's trying not to be funny. And then when
very smart thing that they did was using that to give the characters a chance to reintroduce themselves, because if anybody's gone into this episode not having watched Red Dwarf before, you've now got Holly there, who the characters need to explain their history and who they are to.
Absolutely. And then the reintroduction that you had is just like, it's another joke that's been brilliantly set up. Just like, you're just there, he's just there thinking, wait, if I bring back in this backup and everything, I'll have 3 million years of knowledge. I'll be
as clever as he is.
and it's just like it's set up for a joke brilliantly for people who don't know who Holly is, but then everybody else who does know Holly and everything is just like, we see where this is going, and this is still hilarious.
Oh, and I cheered. Genuinely, my mum will attest as to how loud I cheered when he was rebooting and was going, what's happening? What's happening? It cuts out. He comes back. What's happening, dudes? Yes! That's Holly back!
That's absolutely brilliant. I mean, just the only other thing then, which I would normally put this as a critique and everything, but it's just like, it's completely understandable why they didn't and everything, is something we discussed previously. If they could just find some way to have Hattie Hayridge back and everything, that would just be brilliant. Yeah. Have the two of them bouncing off each other and everything. But it's just like, I'm happy now that we have Holly back and everything. And what it seems to be is that we have Holly back for good this time. So if anything else does come out of this and everything, we are going to have Norman Lovett back. And I love that that's a thing.
Yeah, it's a solid way to bring him back as well. Bringing him back as the original Holly. Because I think they tried that in Series 8. Or was that... I can never remember in those first three episodes of Series 8 what's supposed to be a dream and a simulation and what's real. Because it kept jumping out between different levels of they're actually in a dream and now we're all in a dream. That they're in a simulation. Now we're in a dream of a simulation. All of that bollocks, but... Something that doesn't work in scripts for me. But now, doing that and having Holly, I will be as clever as he was. 3 million years of experience. And Holly went mad over those 3 million years. And the cast, the characters know that he's gone mental, but they want him back even more because he's gone mental.
And then it leads to just one of these brilliant shots and moments and everything, because one thing that we've also gone on about is that the budget that they've had for the effects, the model work, the CG and everything, it has gone up a bit. It is still a television level, but it's just like, because of the fact that they're doing this movie, they now have the budget of an entire 6-episode series worth for this one 90-minute movie and everything. And it shows and everything. I mean, yes, it's still TV effects level and everything, but it is still grand in scale and everything. I mean, the crashing of the spaceships and everything, and the destruction of the moons and everything is just like, and then all the stuff that they put behind it, the music and everything, is just like, it feels absolutely grand, and I love it.
Yeah, that's it. The music is another standout for this, and when that first 5 minutes on the cat ship. And it cuts to the shot of Red Dwarf. I was crossing my finger going, please play the memory music. Please play the memory music. Please play. Bam, ba-ba-bam, ba-ba-bam. Yes! That's another cheer moment, because as a Red Dwarf fan, you want them to hit those beats and to get that familiarity. And the music swelling when it needed to. Yeah, they might do a soundtrack for this. Who knows?
I would absolutely love it if they did that and everything. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. And I think having the budget now to have Norman Lovett on the screens behind the cast and actually talking to the cast on a screen, that lends itself to a lot more. Because previously it's been, even in the Dave era, it's been a green screen that they've had and they've done Norman Lovett afterwards. But having him there in real time certainly lent a lot to it, because the cast love him. Chris Barry does an amazing Norman Lovett impression. Chris Barry does an amazing everyone. Yeah. Robert Llewellyn as well does a great Norman Lovett impression.
And then also, speaking of Robert Llewellyn and everything, the stuff that he gets in this as well and everything, just everybody gets their chance to shine and everything. And especially Robert and Chris at the end, just those scenes of them and each other and everything, and just even Rimmer just begrudging the fact that he has to give up everything just to get Crichton back and everything. It's just like you see that he still has a heart somewhere and everything, and just
it's a strong moment for Rimmer.
Yes,
and all those moments of Crichton on the crashed Starbug when he's reading the manual.
No, that's gonna be a joke my dad's gonna love and everything, because he has an affinity for those Haynes manuals and everything. And it's just like,
and the electric Starbug, Robert Llewellyn being so involved in electric vehicles and having that fully charged YouTube channel, and now all a red Starbug being electric. Well, it's electric, sir. It's a hybrid. Yay! And they power it up, and he sat there in the background going, it's electric, it doesn't make any noise.
Oh, no, yeah, no, he just gets to have his moment there. I love that.
Yeah. And when Lister wants to tell the cat clerics that he's not a god, and he's going, Crichton, you do it. Crichton goes, the truth is, Mr. Lister is the most wonderful man I've ever met. See, that suit, you wouldn't think that it lends itself to so much physical comedy, but that suit is superb. The mouth, the whole headpiece, you can truly see Robert Llewellyn is axing his socks up underneath that to get it so expressive.
Indeedy. So, and yeah, like I said, with regards to it, it just leads to an absolutely, just some brilliant final jokes, just the way that they sort out the Ferron and everything with regards to Chekhov's laser is just brilliant. The revival of Christ and everything. And then just that final joke of them converting over to a religion of Rimmer.
Of Rimmer, yes. Rimmer, Arnold Rimmer.
I just love it. I love it. And it's just like,
that's going to be quoted to him at every convention now. He's never going to get away from that song.
No, it's either going to be that, or it's going to be Arnold, Arnold, Arnold Rimmer, Morella.
Arnold Rimmer. Then the garden, and if you play your cards right, he might just come round for dinner.
Or either that, or the one from the dream back in the very beginning of the series. If I could have someone to watch over me.
Watch over me.
Whilst he's just dancing with a top hat, spats, and his underwear.
He's wearing the sock suspenders, isn't he?
And the sock suspenders and the underwear.
The little skirt, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. But, yeah. Yeah.
I hope the cast enjoyed themselves. They certainly seem to in all the behind-the-scenes stuff. And they didn't have Robert Llewellyn for quite a bit of the filming. He went off ill. He had surgery or something. I don't think they said what it was. But yeah, he went off ill for about a week as they were filming it. So they had a stand-in. So I've now got to go back and rewatch it and see the scenes when Crichton's in the background and not played by Robert Llewellyn, because they just had a stand-in because Robert Llewellyn was in hospital. And all they had to completely changed the schedule around. I was like, right, what scenes don't have Crichton in? We're going to film them this week when we don't have him.
Yeah.
And it's watching that behind the scenes and all the things that didn't quite go right for them and watching the smeg ups and so many takes of so many jokes. Yeah. There's one point where Danny John-Jules, he's still wearing his glasses because he has reading glasses in real life. And they start up a scene and the director just shouts, Danny, you've still got your glasses on. He takes them off slowly and puts his fingers up to the puts his middle finger up to the audience. Stop laughing at me. I know you've heard this joke 12 times already, but you've got to laugh at it exactly the same because this might be the one that goes into the TV show.
Oh, God. Okay, but yeah, with regards to it, I think there's only about one or two other things that we can talk about outside of this and everything. So the last thing with regards to just this episode is just that, yeah, it nailed pretty much 95 to 99% of it right on the head. There were just one or two things that could have been handled better and everything, only slightly. Mm. But just the vast majority of it is just like, yes, you have got this on point.
Yeah, it was Red Dwarf being very Red Dwarf and having the ambition and the scale to expand upon everything it wants to do. It's the movie we deserved.
Absolutely.
It's the movie that they deserve to do, all the writers and the directors and the cast that love the show so much. It's so nice that they've got to do something like this. Because if it does end up being the last one, they're going out on a high. But I hope it's not. I hope that they come back and film 14 more series of it.
Yeah, no, that's one of the last things that I just wanted to go with and everything, just what we could possibly get next in the future and everything. It's like, I am hoping that they are going to be giving more and everything, because with regards to it, if it does have to end, I would like it to have this sort of definitive end, if you get what I mean and everything. Like, just get Rob back for one last collaborative script and just get everything done, dusted, and closed off so that it wouldn't be able to come back again. They close off on their own terms.
Yeah. Well, it was this movie answered a question about what happened to the cats from the original series. Are there any other questions like that that still need answering?
With regards to it, I don't really think that there's any other questions that need answering and everything. But again, they have done with regards to series 10, 11, and 12 and everything, they've continued on and just made good and good episodes and everything just for the sake of it. As in, there's nothing that would be tying back into the past or anything, but that they've still been absolutely brilliant episodes. The reason why this one is tied back into the past and everything is that they wanted to get something for the mythology in order to get this grand movie out and everything. And with regards to that, it's worked in that instance, but now the only way that I think they could really go back onto it now and everything, anything like that, is if they are doing a grand definitive end. The way that this is sort of set up and everything is just like, it is a movie, it's giving a grand scale and everything, it's finally putting the mythologized movie to rest, like what the 2017 animation of Sharda did for the whole backstory of that and everything. It's put that unmade bit of mythology of the series in our universe and everything to rest completely and utterly, and I like that that's being done and everything. I can't really see this as the end. They would want to be doing more and everything, so I can't really see this as the end. I would
see if right, go on then. If you were tasked with writing the final episode and knowing it was going to be the final episode, would you give the characters a definitive end, or would you just have them end it laughing on Red Dwarf and going off and having more off-screen adventures like with Doctor Who did in the 80s?
I would probably try and give the characters a definitive end and everything, like with regards to it. You can do all the stuff that Big Finish did, which was have all the adventures in between and everything, if you ever needed to. But just for the official stuff and everything, if you're giving it an official ending, And that it's not because of anything that's external. If it's your choice and your choice completely alone, I would say give it a definitive ending. It's one of the things that a series that I watched a good couple of years ago did and everything. Have you ever seen something called from Disney called Gravity Falls?
No, I know of it, right. But I've not seen
yes,
animated,
it is one
it?
Of their best ever shows, and I am not saying that lightly. It is literally one of their best ever shows of the last 10 years and everything. To anybody who has Disney Plus and everything, it is all completely on there. Go watch it. It is absolutely amazing. It is absolutely amazing. It's basically Disney doing an animated version of the X-Files, Twin Peaks, and the Twilight Zone all mushed together into one, and it is glorious. Planet. It is absolutely glorious. But the guy who made it, Alex Hirsch and everything, he had basically created for Disney this grand series that everybody was talking about, everybody loved and everything. If they had wanted, it could have gone on for as long as they wanted and made a shit ton of money. He, however, decided to end it completely and definitively as much as he could after series two. You could have had much more of it and everything, but he wanted the main gigantic plot that he was after devising for it finished after two series. He wanted that done because it was under his control. It was his decision. There was nothing external that was forcing him to do that. If he wanted, he could have literally continued it on and made a shit ton of money for merchandising and everything like that and everything. But he decided to end it on his own terms. That's what I would do with Red Dwarf if there was no external influence. Like, with regards to it, for Doctor Who, you had the external influence that the BBC were cancelling the show rather than the people actually involved in making it and everything. With something like Sarah Jane Adventures, you had the sad truth of the matter that Elizabeth Sladen was no longer with us. So the best way that you would have ended that series was to say that she had continued on and everything. That what happened in our world should not have affected that their world in the slightest and everything. That's where an ending like that works. But if you have Craig and Chris and Robert and Danny and Normal all together and everything, like, none of them are having any falling out, they're all fine and everything, and that there's nothing wrong with any of them that would cause the series to end and everything. If you have all of that and yet you still feel like this is it, this is the furthest that we have gone and everything, this is all that we can do now, which is close it out, that is what I would do. Close it on their terms. If you're able to close it on your, if you're able to do that and everything, you just close it down, finish it off, give the characters a definitive ending, and just let that be that.
See, I wouldn't. I have a lot of respect for shows that do that. Some recent history shows like The Good Place ended after four series and gave its own definitive end. Orphan Black did the same. Scrubs tried to in series 8. And we don't talk about series 9 of Scrubs, but never mind. But I think Red Dwarf, for me, is one of those shows where even when the cast do pass away, I still want there to be something going on with it. I still think that even if it's just stories that are published as books or whatever, I would still love that crew to still be out there. So I would never give it a definitive end.
Well,
I would much prefer it to be like Doctor Who, because there isn't really a continuous story going all the way through. Each episode is its own story, and so you can take them back and set a story, if you did a big finished audio for them, set a story between series 8 and Back to Earth of showing them how they got off the dying ship, set a story between 2 and 3 where they show how Crichton changed his face and Lister's twins grew up into 30 years in a month. But I think that after this, they left it open-ended here, didn't they? They said that they just went back onto Red Dwarf and were going to carry on having adventures. And that's how I would end it. I'd have them walking off. There are worlds out there where the smeg is burning, because the trees asleep and the rivers dream. all of that.
I get where you're coming from. Basically, there's a way that it can be done either of those ways for this series and everything. And although we would have our preference with it, we would it's basically a case whereby we wouldn't mind which one that they went for. Because regardless of which one they would do it well.
That's it. You know that they are going to handle it. And if they are given an end, and I don't think they will be, because this last night, going by the viewing figures, was watched by about a sixth of the television viewing audience. It was the highest rated thing that wasn't on BBC or ITV of the night. So it is popular. It probably Dave's biggest draw. So I can imagine Dave wants it.
Definitely. With regards to it, one other thing that you mentioned there, which I actually had a think about yesterday before the episode came on and everything, because I was watching a lot of videos on Red Dwarf, most notably the Red Dwarf vlogs done by Dina, aka Cyborg Cat, on YouTube and everything, which are absolutely brilliant, and she is an absolute brilliant host and looks through all the episodes and also does this discussion on Cat as a character and everything, which is just absolutely brilliant. Just going through all the mannerisms, the costumes and everything is just like, you just have to look them up and watch them and everything. They're just absolutely brilliant. But one of the ones that I was watching was she was going through the ones whereby they've had to describe what had happened either between series or the unmade episodes and everything, notably Identity Within.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I would like to see, if they were to do it for, say, an anniversary, would be Big Finish getting involved and doing audios of those, but making them proper sitcom audios. As in, having them record it in front of the studio audience so that you get the laugh track.
Well, just on microphones.
Well, I mean, it was able to be done in the past. I remember one thing whereby there's this film from a good number of years ago and everything, The Life and Death of Peter Sellers, which is absolutely brilliant. And they opened up with Jeffrey Rush, who plays Peter Sellers, doing a recreation of how they recorded The Goon Show back in the 1950s and everything. And just the recording and the live sound effects and all, and the audience in front of them and everything. It's something that can be done. Now, it's not something I would ask them. It's not something I would ask them to do for about 12 box sets worth and everything, because it would be a nightmare, a logistic scheduling nightmare to actually do that. But just to have one box set whereby they do a definitive version of Body Snatcher, they do a definitive version of Dad, they do a definitive version of Identity Within, you do all of that for an anniversary and everything, that would be something good.
Is that the one with the narrated storyboards on the Series 7 DVD?
Yes, Identity Within. That's the narrated ones. And then Body Snatcher is the unmade Series 1 episode that got a box set all of its own, whereby it is extremely rare because about 3/4 of the copies got destroyed in a warehouse fire.
I've still not seen them properly because they're on the Blu-ray.
Oh yeah, no, all the documentary bits and the Body Snatcher episode are on the Blu-ray and everything. They made a point of making sure that stuff was on the Blu-ray box set and everything. so that is the reason why I got it, because I have all the Red Dwarf series on the first 8 on DVD and everything. They're on my shelf and everything. And it's just like, I have no reason to get this. Why should I get this Body Snatcher disc? Give me.
Yeah, if I see it in a Zoom sale, I might go and buy it at some point. Or somebody might buy it for my birthday, who knows? But it's on my Amazon wish list. Every so often I'll check it. It's still on there, nobody's brought it me yet. Because as much as I will watch it and ingest it, and I've been meaning to do a Red Dwarf full marathon again, because it's been a while since I've properly done one, and getting the Blu-ray box set would be an ideal place to do it from.
But
it is a bit of expense.
Yeah, no,
Maybe if I got rid of my original DVDs and sold them on, I could do it, but I don't know.
Well, with regards to it, it's just...
But it's not got the Dave stuff, has it?
No, it doesn't have the Dave stuff.
Another box set with the Dave stuff on.
No, they have the Dave stuff because they were doing a definitive version of the BBC era and everything. I dare say if that, it comes to a point whereby they completely finish off Red Dwarf and everything, they would have one final box... UK TV and BBC would get together to have one final box set that would have everything.
Mm. What they might do now with this special is do a Dave era box set.
Could potentially, yeah. I mean, that...
Because they've had, what, three series now?
Yeah, three full series, Back to Earth, and then this special.
Back to Earth, yeah. So that there's enough there for a box set.
It is indeed. But, yeah, if there is one thing that I would be wanting above all else and everything, it's just, like, that just came into my head and everything. Like, it would be nice as a one-off just to do the audio sitcom format of those three unmade stories and just have them in a kind of a definitive manner and everything. Because if you did that, then you would just be getting all five or six of them into Big Finish proper, if you know what I mean. And it's just like, once you get them in for one thing, you'd be getting them in for several.
Yeah. There was something that Big Finish did. It was Sylvester McCoy and her that plays Charlie Pollard.
Yes. Fly Me to the Moon.
There was that. They recorded that. That was like a sitcom thing in front of an audience, wasn't it? Or a comedy stage show.
It was something similar to that and everything. So they are able to do it and everything. I would dare say they would more than likely get assistance with it from UK TV and everything. Just all of the setup for having the audience and everything. Or just organising a venue where you can have an audience that can be recorded. But it would be something that you could just organise, rehearse and everything, and then just have the full-on recording. Because with regards to it, a lot of the stuff with the Big Finish and everything is that you have about 6 months of post-production, which is composing the music, getting the sound effects right and everything. You would be able to handle some of that live when you're doing the recording for something like this. But
oh, you'd have a full Foley setter, wouldn't you? Like chopping cabbages in half and squishing socks together.
You would have a Foley setup, either doing the actual action or having the sound effect play and everything. Now it wouldn't all be completely, because you would still have to edit. You would still have to edit some of it, especially when they fluff up their lines and everything. So with regards to it, yes, that would be something. You would still need this full set of deleted scenes, smeg ups, and everything. But it's something I would just like to have happen to just again close.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice idea for them to consider anyway. If anyone involved in making Red Dwarf does listen to this, contact Nick Briggs and Jason May Gallery.
Well, with the guys, I have spoken to Andrew Ellard, so you never know.
Yeah, Andrew Ellard, you asked him on, didn't he? But he said no, because he works on it.
Absolutely. But yeah, that's just about everything, so... Yeah, it was an absolutely brilliant episode. It's now a definitive movie for Red Dwarf and everything. There's one or two things which could have been handled better and everything, but at least one of them is definitely going to be fixed when the Blu-ray comes out and everything. But yeah, apart from just one request that I would have and everything, that nothing much else can really be done with that. It's perfect.
Yeah, it is. I loved it. And what I tweeted after towards the end of it airing, when they were talking about Rimmer being a superhero, I just tweeted, "These are my superheroes, the Red Dwarf crew, the boys from the Dwarf." I have so much respect for these characters and for this show, for these writings. I'm so into it.
Absolutely. But, yeah, with regards to that, that is yet another ending for us. And this time, I really don't know when the hell we're going to be back, because...
No, it's been nice to gush about something absolutely. That isn't Doctor Who.
But with regards to that, Doctor Who is the only thing I know that we're definitely coming back for. And even now, that's even more so now, because of what's happening, is up in the air as to when it's coming back and everything. So there will be a while to wait.
It's a damn good thing they recorded Revolution of the Daleks.
Oh, yes, yes.
Back in 2019.
Yes, no, we are coming back for the Christmas or the New Year special, whichever one they decide it's going to be and everything. But beyond that, then, it's a similar issue that I've stated, that we do the tweet-alongs for all the Doctor Who episodes, and that we're now after getting onto Series 11, and that very soon
we're going to
do Series 12, and it's just like... What do we do now? I don't know what we do.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? One day we shall come back.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
One day, one day.
So, yeah.
Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties.
Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine. Goodbye, Matthew. Goodbye, my dear.
Yes, my bad.
No, yours is better. Yours is better.
Combining the two.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, thank you for listening, everybody.
Absolutely.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to us gush about Red Dwarf for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
90 minutes. We should do a commentary. That's what we can do. We can do commentaries.
That is something that we can do, yes. Somebody just give us a Doctor Who episode and just you, me and Neil, we just do commentaries and just get someone on to do the commentaries with us and everything. We might actually get Nick.
Yeah.
We might actually get Nick. We might actually get Nick and Benji.
Yeah, they're doing Planet of the Daleks at the minute, aren't they?
Are they? Oh, yeah. No, I know that they did Death of the Daleks, because they mentioned that at the drop of a hat.
Was it
They definitely did that one, because they joke about that all the time.
Oh yeah. See, I don't listen to the podcast as much as I should.
No, I mean
being in a podcast, I don't listen to as many podcasts as I used to.
No.
I listen to more Big Finish.
I know. I'm the same. It's something I really need to fix and everything. I listen to a lot of Big Finish, but just the podcast and everything is just like Finding Team. But anyways, yeah, that's done and dusted. We are definitely going to be back whenever they do decide to do the Doctor Who special. Until then, unless anything else comes up in the meantime, Matthew, thank you very much for your time and everything, and doing this at
your notice and everything.
Thank you so very much, our beautiful listeners, for listening and everything. If anything does come up that we feel inclined to do a podcast on, we will be making sure that we will be advertising that completely across wherever we are and everything.
We will never stop talking about this podcast.
No, we won't. But until then, this is the end. Ah, the Smegan is, we're going to be back.
And so we face the final.
Ah, the Smegan is the end.
Who are we going to kick in the testicles like Rimmer did in the
Michael Grade.
In Series 8? Who's our Grim Reaper? Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Bipsky.
I can go eat my ham sandwich now.
Again, sorry for bothering your lunch. Toodly Pipsky listeners, see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Terror of the Tweeters, the day after yesterday, from Red Dwarf, The Promised Land, recorded on the 10th of April, 2020. Your hosts were John Ryan and Matthew Ross. The opening theme tune was the remix theme from Red Dwarf, and the closing theme was the instrumental version of the single version of Tongue Tied. Both were composed and remixed by Howard Goodall and sang by Danny John Jules. Any and all copyrighted material is the registered property of their respective owners, utilised under the Fair Use Agreement, and no infringement is intended. Thank you very much for listening. and we'll see you in Christmas or the New Year, whenever they decide to do it.